Hi, I'm Tony Rossi for the Christophers, and today I'll be talking with someone who is tough as they come. My guest is retired Army Staff Sergeant Travis Mills, who is one of only five members of the military wounded in our wars in the Middle East to have survived quadruple amputee injuries. He's going to share his story, so stay with us. Christopher Close-Up starts right now. Hello and welcome to Christopher Close-Up. I'm Tony Rossi, and my guest today is retired U.S. Army Staff Sergeant Travis Mills. Travis was on his third tour in Afghanistan when an IED explosion changed his life. At age 24, he became one of only five soldiers from our wars in Iraq and Afghanistan to survive the amputation of both arms and both legs. Though pain and despair almost broke his spirit, Travis's toughness won out. After 13 surgeries and hundreds of hours of rehabilitation, he is able to walk, drive, and even make breakfast for his wife and daughter. And he also runs a foundation that shows wounded veterans and their families that they can overcome their challenges. Travis shares his story in the Christopher Award-winning memoir, Tough as They Come, and he's also here to share it with us today. Now I'm pleased to welcome to Christopher Close-Up, Travis Mills. Travis, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Now, let me ask you first, before we specifically talk about the book, Tough as They Come, when did your interest in serving your country through the military first come up in your life?
Well, my dad did it, and I thought it sounded fun, but everybody pushed you to go to college, so I did college for a little bit, found out I didn't like the being in debt part, and I left college for my ex-girlfriend who had another boyfriend I didn't know about. So I found out she had another boyfriend, and I quit college football. I thought, you know what? Let's try something better. And then the Army was like, hey, I'll offer $24,000 if you want to sign up with Uncle Sam. And I thought college debt paid off. Sounds like a great idea. So I did. And it just, I was part of football teams and baseball teams, basketball teams growing up. So it felt like there was real camaraderie I was missing.
Yeah.
And it sounded like something fun. They showed me a video of a guy jumping out of an airplane and then kicking bad guys in the face, we'll say. And I thought, yep, that's it. That's the ticket for me. And I went and signed up. Within 2 weeks, I was out to basic training.
Wow,
didn't
wow.
Didn't yell that.
Well, in the book, you're talking about, you served in Afghanistan. I'm just curious, when you first got over there, how much of a culture shock was it for you just being in that vicinity and the way that they live there and the Taliban rule and everything?
Well, I was eased into it. I was eased into it because my first deployment, I was with the colonel that I protected, and we didn't live life, like you do in the States or anything like that, but we had a hard building that we lived in, 10 of us, and then we got to eat, fairly warm food every day, so I was eased in. But when I did go out and see everything, I just was impressed that it was like you took a step back in time. I mean, literally, you just stepped right back in time, and you're back in the 1800s how they used to live. It was crazy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what kind of conditions did the Afghan people live with under Taliban rule, just in terms of, we're so used to the freedom of almost everything here in the U.S. What was it like over there for them?
Well, I mean, it depended. If it was a highly Taliban-ruled area, you had to, give taxes to the Taliban. We were on my third deployment, and a sheep actually stepped on a bomb and blew it up.
Mm-hmm.
And the Taliban came and yelled at the farmer, even though they were the ones that, put the bomb in the ground to hit us. Yelled at the farmer, and they took his money, made him pay for the explosives, and, slapping around and then things like that. And they can go in angry and just kill somebody. And there's no law to put them in jail for murder.
Yeah.
So, people are really they're oppressed people. They really are.
Yeah.
Girls can't go to school. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, no, it is. Yeah. I'm talking to retired Staff Sergeant Travis Mills. His book is Tough as They Come. I want to ask you something about it, because in the book you write, I want to read a passage. You write, "My attitude was that my guys always came first. They ate first. And if there was no food left and I didn't eat when we were tired, they slept first. That was the way I wanted it." So I'm wondering, did you learn that spirit of selfless leadership in the Army, or were its roots planted earlier in your life?
Well, I mean, I think they're probably planted earlier in my life, but I had to make sure that they always, did eat first. In the military, my sergeants took care of me, and I learned from them how to be a great leader and how to take care of my guys. And then, it just kind of transformed when I became a leader, and I was a leader at a young age, and that's just how it went. As much as the privates and the specialists, if you will, work for you, when you're an NCO, you work more for them than anything.
Yeah.
And you got to make sure they're taken care of. I mean, I'm a 250-pound walk around guy with 300 pounds, or, you know, 150 pounds of gear. So you got to imagine if I get hit, I want someone to be able to pick me up and carry me out, and they got to like me. So you always got to take care of the guy you left and right.
Sure, sure. Now, can any kind of training prepare you for the first time you find yourself under fire? Because I'm sure that must have been quite the experience for you.
No, I'm actually a little bit embarrassed. First time I got under fire, you know, my arms kept ripping over my head and RPGs. I was actually excited. I was like, yeah, get some, you know, movie. And then someone's like, hey, look, do your job. And I'm like, oh, good point.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got calmed back down. And ever since then, though, after the first time, I mean, it was just like this overwhelming excitement of adrenaline pumping. And you're in it. And you're just scanning your sector. And you want to make sure that, you know what, if they mess with you, you're going to take them out, because you gave them the opportunity not to shoot at you. And once that first round goes off, and it's always them that shoot first, it's game on. And let me tell you what, we show them wrong move, bad decision, not a good day for you. And we would just take care of business.
Right, right. I'm talking to Travis Mills. He's the Christopher Award-winning author of Tough As They Come. Now, let's go to April 10th, 2012. What happened to you on that fateful day?
Well, on April 10th, 2012, I was on an off day. We were supposed to be on an off day, and it just so happened that we got called up, that there was, you know, some IED threat to Taliban put them in. They wanted to come look at them and take them out. And it's supposed to be inside the city. Well, where we were at, everything was IED. So mm-hmm. We went out around 4:30 at night, and I happened to go to an area. I had the guy in front of me with the minesweeper clear the area, make sure that nothing was off, nothing alarmed us that anything was in the ground. And I took my backpack off full of ammo to link rounds and make sure we were ready for a fight if we got in one, because we were in a pretty bad area. And I put my bag on the ground, and it just happened to my backpack, set off an improvised explosive device. The bomb went off, ripped off my right arm at the mid-bicep, right leg at the knee joint. Left leg was broke through the bone, a couple of pieces of muscle and tendon holding it on at the knee.
Mm-hmm.
And my left arm was still there, but my wrist was blown out pretty bad to where I could still use it, but it wasn't very functional. So I hit the ground, rolled over, saw the damage, called my LC on my radio with my left hand. That 6-4 just hit a bomb. I need your medic over here with my medic. And the medics went to work, and, you know, they started working at me, and I told them, leave me alone. I didn't think I was going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
And they ended up saving my life, fortunately for me. So I'm very thankful, because I'm, you know, I was double amputee that day. Went to the operating table that afternoon. They pulled my pants off to operate on me. My left leg popped off with it. So I was a triple amputee.
Oh.
And then 2 days later, April 12th, after 14 hours of surgery the first day, 9 doctors, 7 nurses, 2 nurses for 9 hours just pumped air into my lungs to keep me alive.
Yeah.
And, you know, then April 12th, I was transferred, and I went to surgery in Bagram from Kandahar, and they had to cut my left hand off because the skin had necrotized, or the skin had died around my wrist. So they cut my arm off at mid-wrist, so I became the fourth out of 4 at the time, now 5 total quadruple amputees to survive these kind of injuries from the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq.
Yeah, yeah. Do you remember a lot of that stuff, or were you unconscious at the time and you kind of got it from other people, like what actually went down?
No, I was awake the whole time until they knocked me out in the operating table. Matter of fact, when that I got hit and I was awake, I got to the helicopter. I yelled at the flight medics to take care of my guys, because 2 guys got hurt with me, and kind of gave them, you know, give my guys water and tell them to be okay. And they were impressed. They actually wrote a passage in the book for me, wrote a letter to me that I put in the book. It was amazing. And then after that, they knocked me out on the operating table. I kept telling them, quit touching me, I'm fine, leave me alone. I kept trying to sit up and get away from them.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, no, you need to, I don't know how you're still awake, started to know, you need to go to sleep. And then I kicked in, I might not see my family. So I started saying, my little girl, I'm never going to see her again.
Yeah.
And then I was out, like I was done.
Yeah.
And but I remember all of it clearly.
Okay. Well, a lot of times, since you just mentioned your wife and your daughter, I've seen military spouses and families described as like heroes on the home front. What was life like for your wife, Kelsey, during this time?
Kelsey had it rough. I mean, she probably had it worse than me. I was the one going through it, but she had to sit and wait and wonder what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I first got hit, it was pretty bad. She got the phone call telling her what happened, and she didn't know what to do. And then when I saw her for the very first time, you see, I woke up for the very first time in Longstreet, Germany on April 14th, the 4 days after the event. Well, my birthday is actually April 14th, so it was a pretty miserable 25th birthday.
Wow.
To celebrate the quarter century kind of was horrible. But I woke up, so I guess that's good looking back. But you see, April 17th, I saw my wife for the first time. And the first time that we got to talk was just her signing a paper to cut 2 inches off my right leg.
Oh.
Because I had rolled into Walter Reed, my stitches ripped open.
Yeah.
And they said, you're going to bleed out if you don't have her sign this paper. So she had to sign a paper, and that was it. And then the next day I saw her, I said, look, Kelsey, you really don't have to do this. You know, I can't do anything. I went from 250 pounds, 6 foot three to, you know, 4 foot nothing, 140 pounds. So mm-hmm. I lost 110 pounds in the mix.
Yeah.
And I just said, you're going to put up with this, you can go. And she said, that's not how this works. And she stayed with me. And, you know, I joke around and tell people she stayed with me for the handicap parking because I'm in the VIP club. But she's really been my main support. And then knowing that my little girl has to look up to me as her father, I might as well not feel sorry for myself and get going. So that's what I've done. You know, I've truly gotten better because my little girl and my wife inspired me to make sure that I wasn't going to be a burden or a pain and I could keep moving forward in life.
Yeah, yeah. I'm talking to retired Staff Sergeant Travis Mills. He's the author of the book Tough As They Come. He's one of only five quadruple amputees who was injured in the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. Well, there's a great picture in the book about the first time you saw your daughter, baby daughter Chloe, after your injury. Tell me about that and what it meant to you for her to kind of still see you as the dad she knew.
Absolutely. I mean, I was under the impression that I was going to look like a monster. Short arm, short leg, tubes out of everywhere, and she was going to be afraid of me. She's only 6 months old, but I couldn't have been a pretty sight. But then I realized after seeing the picture and understanding her excitement, every stuffed animal she has short arms and legs and a hairy chest. That's what I have.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it was really great. I got to see her, and you can see the tears in my eyes starting to come out, and you know, she just saw me as a regular old dad, no big deal. She didn't know me any different, so we get along great. And, you know, it just truly was, you know, it's great that Walter Reed exists where I recovered at because, you know, within 5 weeks I had my arm, within 7 weeks and 4 days I was walking again on prosthetics. And I just owe everything I have to them and my family and the ability to still go on in life.
Yeah, yeah. Well, how difficult was it? Because you write a lot in Tough As They Come about the physical pain you were experiencing, and I guess also the emotional pain. How big a deal was it to kind of get past that, and how did it happen?
Well, I mean, after 2 weeks in, I had such bad pain that they had tried a new special case study on me. They were trying all these different things, and they thought I was either going to kill myself on being too immune to the painkillers.
Mm-hmm.
Or I would just always be in pain and have a miserable life. So they tried this ketamine coma. It's the second person in the nation, 30th in the world. And it was this crazy amount, like 600 milligrams an hour for 5 days straight. And it's supposed to reset my nerve endings. But it reset them to think that where my limbs end is where my nerves end. Instead, they don't try to find my feet or my hands anymore, which is really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
And from that, I just, you know, 6 months into my explosion, I quit medication. So I was just like, I'm done with this. I don't need it. And I just had to get better and keep striving to push forward in life and make it what I want it to be. You know, I wouldn't let no one determine my destiny. I would do it myself.
I'm Tony Rossi, and you're listening to Christopher Close-Up. I'll be back in a minute with more of my conversation with Travis Mills. But first, here's a message the Christophers would like to share with you.
Every once in a while, we come face to face with someone who has borne the weight of the world on their shoulders without losing hope or crumbling under the pressure. How are some people able to cope in circumstances that would debilitate the rest of us? The short answer is that their perseverance is grounded in faith. That's why the Christophers have prepared a news note called Persevering Through Pain and Struggle. It shares stories and reflections that will help you endure challenging times by relying on the promise of God's love. To request your free copy of Persevering Through Pain and Struggle, send an email to radio@christophers.org. Or call our toll-free number at 1-888-298-4050. We look forward to hearing from you.
Welcome back to Christopher Close-Up. I'm Tony Rossi, and I'm talking with Christopher Award-winning author Travis Mills. Travis is one of only five members of the military wounded in our wars in the Middle East to have survived the amputation of both arms and both legs. Let me ask you about the God factor, because I know you were a believer, and when somebody can go through something like you went through, I think it's normal to have some kind of angry conversations with God. How did you navigate the spiritual part of life when you were going through all this?
Well, I think in the book, I really like to, you know, tell people what's up to come that I had my doubts. I was wondering, I said, well, I do everything right. I pay my taxes, take care of my family. You know, I have no outstanding credit lines or anything. My bills are paid up. So what did I do wrong in life to make God hate me or punish me? And then I realized, you know, it's not okay to be just a believer, you know, when things are going your way. That's not how this works. It's not how it's meant to be. And, I mean, I should be thankful and fortunate enough to still be alive. And I just had to realize that it was important for me to realize that I had my family, I had my life still, I had the ability to do things. And as much as I was upset about the situation, God had a plan for me to keep going forward and do what I'm doing now. I mean, I run a foundation. I help people out. And I have the book out, you know, it's doing very well. I don't talk politics in it. You know, really, I don't want to put a spin on what I'm doing. I just want people to enjoy the story, get inspired by it, and understand that, you know, things, you know, in life happen for a reason. And not every day is the best, but you can't keep going forward and make life what you want it to be.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you start the book with a quote from the book of Joshua in the Bible. It says, "Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. For the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go." Is that a message you also try to get through to other veterans when you're talking to them who've gone through these tough times?
Well, in a way, I don't like to push my religion on other people. They don't want it, so it has to be felt out. But I want to tell you, you know, my sister-in-law brought me a plaque with that on it. It was like a little nice plaque that you put it up.
Mm-hmm.
And I read that every day, probably, you know, 100, 200, 300 times a day, maybe even more. And I told my mom, I said, "Mom, put that down. I don't want to read that no more." I said, "What did God do? Did he take a smoke break? Did he quit on me?"
Yeah.
And she said, "Travis, knock it off and quit it." And she left it up. You know, then I came to the realization that it's not fair to only believe when things are going my way. And I thought, you know what? It would be great to start the book that way so people can understand.
Yeah.
I still have my faith. It was rocked. I still have it, and that's kind of a neat story. I have it in my office now, that same plaque. It fell, and I have a corner broke off, but I still keep it.
Okay. I'm talking to Travis Mills about his book, Tough As They Come. But when you do talk to veterans now, because I know you work through the Travis Mills Foundation, your website is travismills.org, so people should look for it there. When you talk to veterans who've suffered these injuries, who are in that dark place mentally, how do you try to give them hope for the future, the fact that they can move forward in a positive way?
Well, the beauty is I'm one of five surviving quadruple amputees. I mean, I'm the best-looking quadruple amputee from the wars you've ever seen. But when I go to these people's rooms, they're not usually in the same boat as me. They don't have the same amount of limb loss. So when they're doubting themselves, they're upset with the situation, they don't know how they're going to go on, and I come walking in, that's a true testament to them that, oh, I can get better.
Yeah.
And I'm going to make it. And then I go ahead and start talking and telling them, you know, life goes on, don't worry about it. You're going to be fine. And what questions do you have? What can I explain to you right now? Because I think the beauty of what I do and what I'm able to accomplish is that I'm going through it. I'm personally doing this stuff, and I can show them a different way. I can show them how they can get better. It's not just somebody that's talking that has never experienced it. It's someone that's been there, lived it, done it, and been past it. So that's where I think I'm beneficial in these kind of conversations.
Yeah. Well, one of the inspirations that you had was a Marine corporal named Todd Nicely, who walked into your room when you were recovering. Tell me about him and what seeing him, what effect did that have on your own attitude towards recovery?
Well, like I said, I told my wife she can leave. I didn't know how I was going to ever be a productive member of my family or society and take care of my little girl and my wife. And then he walked in and was like, "Hey, what's up? I'm Todd." And I thought I was hallucinating on the medication again. And he was like, you know, I said, "Do you want a ginger ale?" I offered him. You thought I asked him to get me a ginger ale.
Uh-huh.
So he walked over, got on a knee, and reached under a counter, grabbed a ginger ale with a fake arm, opened it with another fake arm, said, "Hey, what's up? Do you want this now? How are you going to drink it?" I said, "I was kidding if you wanted it." And I said, "How'd you do that?" He said, "You know what? You're going to be fine. You got to be patient. It's not going to always be a fun, you know, a fun time, but you're going to be okay."
Mm-hmm.
And that motivated me. It made me realize if he can do it, I can do it, and I was going to get better. Matter of fact, I mean, how crazy, right now, I'm driving to an event with the governor of Maine and a couple of senators of Maine, and I'm talking on Bluetooth ripping down the road. So, I mean, I live a life, and I speak. I get out of jail free card. It really is like Monopoly.
Yeah.
But you have this. I'm just joking. I'm joking. I'm more of a joke.
No, it's pretty impressive. I mean, like you even mentioned in the book that the technology of prosthetics has really advanced in the last 50 years. I mean, how, and anybody who sees the cover of your book, Tough As They Come, is going to see some of those prosthetics. How big a deal are those prosthetics for you? What do they help you to accomplish?
Everything. They're literally everything that I do. I make, you know, I go, my wife just went to Scotland for 10 days for a vacation.
Mm-hmm.
So my little girl and I were with my dad came up. So, I mean, I help her get dressed. I help her brush her hair. I help her when she's brushing her teeth. I'm able to do just anything I really want to a certain extent. I just, I need help getting my legs off. My arm I put on by myself, and I use that for everything. I mean, feed myself. You name it, put clothes on, you know, dress myself.
Mm-hmm.
So without prosthetics, it'd be a really miserable time. I'm thankful that I'm not in the Civil War era.
Yeah.
And this happens.
Yeah. Well, there was a point in your recovery when you decided to take part in the Tunnel to Towers 5K race here in New York City, even though you were still getting used to the prosthetic legs. What made you want to do that so soon in your recovery, and what was the result?
Well, Todd said he was going to do it. When I met Todd, the next day I met a gentleman that were with Todd, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation, or Tiller Foundation. And they said, well, you want to come up to New York City? We'll host it. We'll even push you in the race. And I was like, are you getting pushed? And he said, no, I'm walking it. I said, well, I'll walk it too. And I made the determination I was going to walk it, just four weeks after my explosion. I didn't have legs or arms or anything. But I'll walk it too with you.
Yeah.
And then that was one of my goals I set, and I wanted to walk it, so I did. I made sure I just kept pushing towards that goal. And then I walked it, and it was painful. And I was in the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel, which I know is renamed now, but I don't know the new name. But I wanted to take a break, and I came out of the tunnel, and there were 343 firefighters standing there with banners around their neck to represent the 343 firefighters that died on 9/11. And I thought, well, if those guys could push so hard that they died, I could push this last 1.2 miles and just get over it. So I did.
Yeah.
And I was excited to be able to do that.
I mean, talking to you today, I mean, it's amazing how your positive attitude and your fun and light spirit. I mean, there's a people in the world who've had a lot less problems than you to go with, and they can be kind of on the negative. How do you manage to stay so positive?
Well, I just talk about perspective. I honestly tell people I have friends that didn't make it home, and I present throughout the nation. I have a speaking group that I started, and I'm with Random House Speakers Bureau, and everybody can find that on my website, travismills.org. But when I go around, I have a slideshow that I present with. And my slide perspective comes up, and there's two guys on the slide. One is a hologram of himself over his tombstone. And next to his tombstone is his little girl that's 3 years old and his wife, Christine. He was a great friend of mine.
Yeah.
And he died. Mm-hmm. And he didn't make it home. He doesn't take his daughter for ice cream. I do. He doesn't take his wife out for dates. I still do. So I think it would be a real selfish slap to the face if I ever gave up myself. Not just to the man that died, but to their families that sacrificed having their loved one gone.
Yeah.
And I think it's just would be ridiculous if I gave up. Plus, the doctors went into my recovery. They could have easily loosened the tourniquet within 30 seconds, that been done, and they would fall to the day.
Mm-hmm.
But they worked 14 hours at first to stabilize me. Numerous surgeries to wash out everything, keep my infections down, and keep me going. So I just can't see myself giving up on them, on my family, or my brothers in arms that have passed away, that didn't get the opportunity to still live after injury.
Yeah, yeah. Did this experience teach you anything that you maybe didn't know about just the power of community, about other people helping you out and you helping other people out?
Well, I mean, I never planned on this, so it surprised me. But I like going out and telling my story. It's therapeutic for getting away.
Mm-hmm.
And just being able to change people's perspective on life helps me out. And let them know that, just keep striving towards your end goal and make yourself what you want yourself to be. And then also, it taught me patience. I never had patience. Oh, never. I still struggle with it. But, like I said, people ask, would I do it again with all the good I'm doing? And I don't want to lie to nobody. No, I wouldn't do it again. I'd be in the military with arms and legs. Probably in E7 right now. Maybe even cross over being an officer. My degree finished up as being a recruiter.
Yeah.
But that's not the life I live. I don't dwell in the past. I reminisce it. I can't change the past, so I might as well not worry about if I didn't step there or put my back here. And just keep pushing forward and, make my life what I want it to be.
Yeah, yeah. Before we wrap, I just want to also touch on the fact that Gary Sinise wrote the foreword to your book. I've interviewed him on this show. I really admire his dedication to veterans. How did you get to know Gary, and what role has he played in your life since then?
Oh, Gary Sinise, he came to the hospital, and you just meet guys all the time. He built out this foundation, the Gary Sinise Foundation, built smart homes for guys that had been traumatically injured. And he said he's going to build me a smart home. And I thought, okay, that sounds great. I thought he was just doing his bit, Come in, smile, take pictures, shake hands. And then next time he came to the hospital, a week or two later, he was waiting to talk to me and ask where we were going to go, Michigan, Maine, Texas, where are we going to move to? And I thought, wow, he actually listened.
Yeah.
And now I'm fortunate. I'm an ambassador for his foundation. I'm actually going to California in 2 weeks to help him out with his mission and be a presenter at his big annual Gary Sinise Foundation banquet.
That's great. That's great.
He's a great guy. He'll randomly just text you or you'll text him and say, how's it going? And I would like to, we're friends. It's crazy.
Yeah, no.
He's such a big talent.
Yeah, no, he's great. He doesn't just do it, you know, for the publicity. He's you can tell he genuinely cares about all these people, all the veterans that he visits and you know, does stuff for and raises his foundation. In our final minute, just tell me, what do you hope that people get out of reading this book, Tough as They Come?
Well, I mean, I hope it can evolve with the foundation, of course. That's my big goal now, is get the foundation up and going. We're definitely well on our way. But I just think people need to know the story that I'm telling, because it's not politically motivated. It's not, you know, it's faith-based, but it doesn't push religion where you're going to feel uncomfortable if you don't share the same religion as me. But just, hey, there's two things that authors know that I'm very proud of. One, if you serve, thank you for your service. I didn't serve any more than anybody else. I don't feel any more entitled. And I don't feel like I did anything special. I had one bad day at work.
Yeah.
Two, you know, I don't know what everybody in the world is going through, what their problems are, but we all have our own problems. So I don't think my problems outweigh anybody else's. I just had my problems. I chose to get through them, and this is how I did it. And if someone's going through something, I really think my book can help them, inspire them, make them laugh, make them cry, you know, be happy, be angry, be sad, all the emotions, and just walk away feeling really good about the story at the end of the day.
Yeah. I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close-Up. I've been talking to retired Staff Sergeant Travis Mills about his book, Tough as They Come. Travis is one of only five people who have survived quadruple amputee injuries in the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and he is committed to living a life of purpose and significance and trusting that God is with him wherever he goes, like we mentioned before about that quote from the book of Joshua. And he appreciates every day as a gift, and he really is an example of something we all can learn from, both military veterans who've experienced injuries and just, you know, the average person on the street, to live life with gratitude and appreciation and humor and faith. So, Travis, thanks for sharing your story with us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. I have a great day, great weekend, and please check out TravisMills.org for any questions about anything I'm doing.
Now, before we end today's show, here's another message the Christophers would like to share with you.
No one is too far gone for God. Regardless of how many poor choices you've made, God is still willing to welcome you back with open arms if you sincerely ask for His forgiveness and try to change your ways. That's why the Christophers have prepared a news note called From Sinners to Saints. It profiles several people who chose to turn their lives around after experiencing God's love and grace. To request your free copy of From Sinners to Saints, send an email to radio@christophers.org or call our toll-free number at 1-888-298-4050. We look forward to hearing from you.
In closing, I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in today, and I encourage you to visit our website at christophers.org to learn more about the Christophers and to download free literature and podcasts. When you're there, you can also find links to our blog and our Facebook and Twitter pages. And if you have any questions or comments about the show, you can send an email to radio@christophers.org. Our engineer for today's show is Brian Bonifacio, and I'm Tony Rossi, your host. Thanks again for joining us, and remember that it's better to light one candle than to curse the darkness.